So I'm looking at these polls from Pennsylvania, and Max, I noticed something.
You mean something other than the usual existential dread?
Yeah, the state is close. Harris is up less than a point, but then there's this other tab with the numbers for Jill Stein.
Oh, the Green Party candidate, yeah.
She's getting about 1% in Pennsylvania, so not very much, but...
Oh, more than the margin of error between Harris and Trump.
Wisconsin, same thing. Michigan, usually 2 points for Stein.
Yeah, you're worried. Could Jill Stein take enough Kamala votes to put Donald Trump back in the White House?
It makes you wonder, is that what Jill Stein wants? Here's a clip of a Seattle politician named Kasharma Sawant introducing Jill Stein at a campaign event in Michigan earlier this week.
We need to be clear about what our goals are. We are not in a position to win the White House, but we do have a real opportunity to win something historic. We could deny Kamala Harris the state of Michigan. And the polls show that most likely Harris cannot win the election without Michigan.
Aaron, help me out. I get that Jill Stein has beef with the Democrats, but it sure sounds like the goal here isn't to pressure Harris to take more left-wing positions. It sounds like the goal is to get Donald Trump elected. But how does that help any progressive causes? Why is she doing this?
In other words, Jill, girly, WID. I'm Aaron Ryan.
And I'm Max Fisher, and this is How We Got Here, a series where we explore a big question behind the week's headlines and tell a story that answers that question.
Our question this week, what does Jill Stein actually stand for in this race, which she could very well help decide for Trump?
Stein's message to voters goes something like this. Both parties are, as she puts it in interviews, controlled by Wall Street and, quote, very much the same. So vote for Stein because she represents both a challenge to the two-party system and a true progressive alternative to Kamala Harris.
But here's the thing. If you look at Stein's record, what she's done and said over the years, you might come away doubting that she really represents the uncompromising progressive challenge she claims.
So, Aaron, I had not realized until we started putting this episode together that Jill Stein has been running on behalf of the Green Party for 22 years now. And she's always campaigned less on winning elections than on symbolically fighting the two-party system, right?
Yes, here she is during her first ever campaign way back in 2002 for Massachusetts governor. This is from a debate hosted on C-SPAN.
The issues before the voters are not simply being a better bureaucrat or who can be the best money manager. And we've had a decade of good money managers and experienced financiers in the governor's office. We have a crisis in healthcare, a crisis in housing, a declining economy that has shifted to a low-wage service economy. Without benefits, workers cannot keep their families out of poverty, provide health care. We have urgent issues, and the problem, Republican, it's not Democrat, it's the stranglehold of big money on our legislature. Which has made it impossible for our government to respond to these critical issues.
So for context, up until 2002, Stein had been an internal medicine physician, and she ran on the idea that neither party was adequately serving public health, which you hear in that clip.
Stein took 3.5% in the race. The Republican candidate, none other than Mitt Romney, won with 49%.
Oh, huh. 3.5%. So nowhere close to winning, but... presumably, Stein rose to the ranks of the Green Party because she did better and better each time she ran, right?
Actually, that first 2002 run was Stein's best performance by far in any three-party race.
Oh, but not best overall?
Her next race was her best overall. In 2006, she ran for the Massachusetts Secretary of the Commonwealth. It's like Secretary of State, but in Massachusetts, they insist on calling it Commonwealth.
They're such a fancy state.
They are difficult people. against a Democrat who held the office since 1995, even with no Republican in the race— she got 15%.
Wow, so her only foray into a two-party race, and she lost 5-1. Woof.
In 2010, she ran for governor again and got 1.4%, which is less than half what she'd gotten before.
Kind of seems like someone on a downward trajectory.
This is a consistent criticism you hear from Stein skeptics on the left. They say she's not actually effective at winning office or at organizing a political party. What she's good at is getting tiny vote shares in big elections, which raises her personal profile.
So how did Stein go from a seemingly declining and marginal Green Party figure into the head of the party then?
Well, 2 years later, Stein ran in the primary to become the Green Party's 2012 presidential nominee. Her opponents were a guy named Kent Mezplay, whose only prior experience was as an air quality inspector, and the actor Roseanne Barr, who, like so many has-beens, was a conspiracy theorist on her way to becoming a far-right Trump supporter.
Oh, yeah. I suspect that Wheatfield might have been hangover from the 2000 election. Remember, Al Gore lost Florida by 500 votes, but Ralph Nader, the Green Party candidate, won nearly 100,000 votes in Florida. So there was a sense that Nader and the Greens had given us Bush and the Iraq War.
And prevented America from having Al Gore, one of the most prominent advocates for the environment at the time, in the Oval Office. We could have had almost an extra decade head start in trying to combat fossil fuel emissions.
Mm-hmm.
The idea of casting a protest vote for the Green Party suddenly felt reckless.
Yeah, and selfish. The takeaway after that 2000 election was, okay, you want to protest the Democrats on the left, find another way to do it because the stakes in a presidential election are too high.
After that, the Green Party only got 0.1% in the next two presidential elections in 2004 and 2008.
Oh, which was how someone like Stein was able to win that 2012 primary and take over the party, because that party was kind of in shambles.
When you hear her talk, especially in older clips, you do understand some of the frustration she's giving voice to. Here she is on C-SPAN in 2012. And remember, this is 4 years after the 2008 financial crisis when the economy was still recovering.
It's not a coincidence that the 99% is struggling and independent politics is really struggling, because the 1%, you know, the very wealthy, the economic elite, really has hijacked our political system and our policies. And part of what they have been able to do is shut out the voice of everyday people, including through independent, non-corporate parties.
Yeah, I get it. I mean, people in 2012 definitely resonated with this idea that there was too much money in politics and too much influence from Wall Street.
But they did not resonate with the idea that this made the Democrats and Republicans effectively the same. Stein only took 0.3% of the vote in November.
Oh, so still no appetite for a left-wing protest vote.
After this, Jill Stein started to sound less like the progressive conscience of the Democratic Party and more like a conspiracy theory crank.
Oh, this is the Russia stuff, right?
Oh, we'll get to that, but there's more. In 2015, right-wing anti-immigration groups in Britain pushed through a referendum to leave the European Union.
Oh, right. Brexit. A disaster.
Unmitigated disaster. Stein released a statement calling it, quote, a victory for those who believe in the right of self-determination and who reject the pro-corporate austerity policies of the political elites in the EU. She said she wanted to, quote, expand the political movement in the United States.
Okay, well, then this was Stein's one political success, because I am proud to report that the United States is, in fact, not part of the European Union.
She's about 200 years late to claim credit for that one.
Anyway, okay, devil's advocate. A small minority within the British left did support Brexit, so maybe Stein was just taking cues from them without really understanding what she was endorsing.
One topic where Dr. Stein does understand what she's endorsing is medicine. And she took a harsh conspiratorial turn once she geared up for the 2016 election. Here she is speaking to parents in March of that year. This comes in the middle of an exchange about whether Wi-Fi...
Whoa.
Yes, Wi-Fi could pose a medical threat to children.
We should not be subjecting kids' brains, especially, to that. And, you know, we don't follow that issue in this country, but in Europe where they do, you know, they have good precautions around wireless, maybe not good enough, you know, because it's very hard to study this stuff. You know, we make guinea pigs out of whole populations and then we discover how many die.
Whoa.
What? Okay, like, there are aspects of Wi-Fi that are bad for people, but it is what the Wi-Fi helps you access and look at.
Right, it's the things on the internet. Wi-Fi itself is perfectly
is
safe.
It's fine. Yeah, Wi-Fi is fine. Wow, Jill, missing the point.
One thing that she is right about, the two-party Wall Street duopoly corporate media simply will not tell you about how Wi-Fi is turning your kids into telepathic super soldiers and making your pets gay.
If my pets are gay, then why are they such shitty dressers? Stein also dabbled heavily in, you guessed it, say it with me, Max,
vaccine
conspiracies. Here she is talking to the Washington Post in 2016, sounding an awful lot like RFK Jr. and Donald Trump.
You know, as a medical doctor, there was a time when I looked very closely at those issues, and not all those issues were completely resolved. There were concerns among physicians about what the vaccination schedule meant, the toxic substances like mercury, which used to be rampant in vaccines. There were real questions that needed to be addressed. I think some of them at least have been addressed. I don't know if all of them have been addressed.
Oh, woof.
Yeah, she goes on to say that the FDA and CDC are controlled by corporate interests with a stake in pushing vaccines, which, like you said, Aaron, is just a straight up RFK Jr. talking point.
The real progressive alternative to corporate Democrats strikes again.
And then there was that trip to Moscow.
Yes, it was a fairy tale dinner gala held in December 2015 by the Russian state media network Russia Today. Jill Stein was one of two Americans in attendance, Max. Do you remember who the other one was?
I do, yes. It was Michael Flynn, the future Trump White House National Security Advisor, future QAnon truther who told Trump to suspend the Constitution, and who also later pled guilty to lying to the FBI about his ties with Russian ambassador to the U.S. Sergei Kislyak.
And do you remember the infamous photo of Flynn sitting next to Putin at the dinner gala?
Yeah, they paid Flynn $45,000 to be there.
Well, also at that table was Putin spokesman Dmitry Peskov, Putin chief of staff Sergei Ivanov, Putin deputy chief of staff Alexei Gromov, a pro-Putin movie director from Serbia, two obscure pro-Putin politicians from Europe, and Jill Stein.
What on earth did she get out of this?
I mean, nightmare blunt rotation. Not money, she says. Stein insists she wasn't paid for it.
So what, legitimacy?
As a campaign stop, yeah, look at me hobnobbing with world leaders. She even promoted the photo of her at Putin's table in a press release along with this video.
It's been very exciting to see our message and our vision really resonate with others who are really looking for a way to bring us all together around a world that works for all of us.
The thing that gets me about it is that she let herself be used as a prop by a right-wing despot at a moment when he was overseeing Russia's invasion of Ukraine, which went on to kill hundreds of thousands of people, all while she was holding herself up as the peace candidate.
And not just the peace candidate, but the brave truth-teller willing to stand up to the warmongers in the Democratic Party.
Yeah, it turns out that principled opposition to war dissipates when there is something in it for her.
Stein got asked about that trip 2 years later in an interview with Democracy Now! And she claimed that actually she had gone to this gala dinner to confront Putin.
Oh, come on.
At the time, Russia had just begun to bomb Syria. And my message was that Russia was following in the disastrous footsteps of U.S. foreign policy in the Middle East.
But how did you end up at that table? This is the head table.
That's right. I knew I was going to be at the head table. All of the foreign diplomats were seated at the head table. Unfortunately, there was no interpreter at the head table, and there were no introductions made. Vladimir Putin came
in. And this was a celebration of 10 years of Russia Today, the—
Well, it was a celebration, but it was also a conference, and there was media there, actually, from all over the world, including U.S. media, Canadian, you know, Chinese, et cetera. It was a real chance to lift up a different point of view about U.S. foreign policy, as well as Russian foreign policy, to a broader audience.
But there were no interpreters at the table. What audience? Are you talking about people who just happen to speak English who are watching RT? Like, what are you talking about, Jill?
So I know people listening might be wondering, like, okay, who cares about one stupid dinner from 9 years ago? And this last clip is why. Because almost nothing that she is saying here is true. There were no diplomats at the table. She never confronted Putin, as she later acknowledged. And she did not express any objection whatsoever to Russian aggression, as we heard in that clip just a second ago. And I think this speaks to what will become an important question when we get to her role in this current election, which is that Jill Stein does not actually believe in or stand for anything. Her supposedly principled stands are empty opportunism to exploit voters who really do care.
Wow, tell me how you really feel, Max. Okay, let's get to the 2016 election.
Oh, yes, Jill Stein's brush with history.
Stein claimed that her candidacy was about challenging the two-party system, but she mostly focused her campaign on taking votes from Democratic candidate Hillary Clinton.
Which is another data point that Jill Stein's Green Party intends to act as a spoiler on the Democrats, in other words, to make the Democrats lose.
Stein argued that Clinton would be worse than Trump on everything from foreign policy to climate change. She also aggressively courted Democrats who'd supported Bernie Sanders.
But I bet she didn't court primary voters who'd supported the losing Republican candidates.
No, this was not a campaign by and for people disaffected by the party system writ large. It was a campaign aimed at disaffected Democrats only.
Yeah, including that summer by crashing the DNC with a camera crew.
Max, do you know who that camera crew was with?
Wait, it wasn't just Jill Stein's campaign people?
Nope, it was a Fox News crew.
Hold on, you're telling me that Jill Stein coordinated this stunt to try to split the Democratic vote with Fox News?
Yes. That's what I'm saying.
So accusing the Democrats of being secretly in league with Republicans while yourself walking around with your personal Fox News escort, it's really Jill Steinert or Jill Steiniest.
Just wait until we get to what she's been up to in 2024, Max.
Okay, but let's close out 2016 first. So she got 1% of the vote, right, which is triple her share in the prior election, but still not very much.
But maybe enough to decide the election. Trump won Pennsylvania by just 44,000 votes. Stein had 50,000. Huh. He won Michigan by 11,000. Stein had 51,000. And in Wisconsin, Trump won by 23,000 to Stein's 31,000.
Oh, so if those votes had gone to Clinton, Trump never would have been president.
It's not for sure that they all would have. Had Stein not run, maybe some of those people would have stayed home, which is what Stein argues.
Well, that's not what you typically hear from political analysts, though. What you hear is that these were people who would have otherwise voted Democrat, but who thought Clinton was going to win no matter what, so put Stein at the top of their ballot as a protest.
Which tracks with Jill Stein's strategy. She wasn't courting non-voters. That was Trump's game. She was courting politically engaged Democrats, people, in other words, who do reliably vote.
After 2000, Ralph Nader, the Green Party candidate who helped put Bush in office, kind of slinked away from the spotlight for a while. But that is not what Jill Stein did in 2016, right?
Nope. She went back to Democratic voters again in November 2016. But this time, she wasn't asking for their votes. She was asking for their money to fund recounts of swing state votes that she implied had been rigged for Trump.
I was asked many times during the campaign, would I stand up and call for a recount if there were doubts about the reliability or the security of the vote? And I always said yes, regardless of who is declared winner.
That was Stein on a Fox News affiliate. She actually raised so many different election conspiracies that we had to cut them back for time. Here's just a snip.
So we saw breaches all over the place, and we know that these machines are wide open. They're essentially an invitation. They're old, they're outdated, they don't have security. The state of California has made them illegal, the very machines that are widespread throughout Wisconsin.
I know I said the anti-vaccine stuff sounded like Trump, but this is literally verbatim Trump election denialism.
Stein began soliciting donations for a recount that she said would cost $2.5 million. But once she raised that, she turned around and said, actually, this is going to cost $4.5 million. Then she revised her made-up number again and ultimately raised $7.3 million.
So remember that Trump had promised to ban Muslim people from entering the country on day one of his presidency. People were terrified, and they were desperate for any bit of hope that his presidency could be averted.
Stein got asked a few times, hey, are you going to return any of those donations if the recount ends up costing less than you raised? Here she is on Vice News.
If there is funds left over, which we do not expect, if in the event that turned out to be the case, we would be following FEC rules about what exactly should be done with that money.
And Aaron, whatever was done with that money.
The Federal Elections Commission later fined Stein tens of thousands of dollars for failing to disclose the answer to that. It turns out she'd spent a lot of it on raises and bonuses for her core staff. She also used the money to pay her legal defense fees during the Senate Intelligence Committee investigation into Russian interference in the 2016 election.
Cool. So did she spend any of it on swing state recounts?
She filed a couple of election-related lawsuits, like one demanding that Pennsylvania use different voting machines in future elections, but that's not a recount. And the district judge in that case called the suit pointless, telling Stein's lawyers, quote, Dr. Stein publicly announced that she seeks to promote election integrity, but she seeks to promote only herself.
Wow. Okay. So there is this terrible, kind of sad irony to Jill Stein getting people's hopes up that she's here to finally take on all the corruption and dishonesty in politics. And not only is she just as guilty of those things herself, but over and over, she uses that misplaced hope to benefit herself at the expense of those supporters.
Jill Stein did not run in 2020. She sat out the Green Party presidential nomination. A guy named Howie Hawkins ran and only got 0.25% of the vote.
Yeah, it kind of feels like 2004, 2008 again. Everyone was maybe a little gun-shy about voting for the Green Party and helping the Republicans win again.
One noteworthy statistic here. More than two-thirds of voters who voted for a third-party candidate in 2016 went on to vote for Biden in 2020. Given that also included Libertarian Party voters and others, it's a safe assumption that nearly all Green Party voters went Democratic.
Which is more evidence that Stein is pulling overwhelmingly from Democrats, not from non-voters.
Well, she's back in 2024, and this time she has some new friends helping her out.
Captain Planet and the Planeteers?
Nope, opposite. The Republican Party.
Cornel West, he's one of my favorite candidates, Cornel West. And I like I like her also, Jill Stein. I like her very much. You know why? She takes 100% from them. He takes 100%.
God, his campaign rallies sound like a Nuremberg home companion. That was Trump at a campaign rally in June. That other name he mentioned is Cornel West, famous college professor who's also running as a left-wing independent.
Okay, but just because Trump sees Stein and Cornel West as helpful doesn't mean he's, like, actually backing their candidacies.
Not Trump himself, but Max, do you remember a Trump lawyer named Jay Sekulow?
Oh, sure. This was Trump's chief outside counsel in his first impeachment trial in 2019. He's kind of a nutty right-winger, represents anti-abortion groups, frequent talking head on Fox News. You're telling me he's helping Jill Stein now?
He's been representing the Green Party, including last month before the Supreme Court.
Oh, this was the Green Party lawsuit to get onto the ballot in Nevada, right?
Jill Stein is not eager to talk about the fact that she's working with notorious Trump lawyer Jay Sekulow, but Sekulow is quite proud of it. Here he is on his podcast last month. Of course he has a podcast.
The Nevada Green Party, of course, we filed suit, and we brought it to the U.S. Supreme Court, and we asked the U.S. Supreme Court to look at it.
Take a Sudafed, Jay. Just in case there is any doubt, here's another clip from the podcast where Sekulow and his co-hosts explain why he took on the case.
You may go, why do we care? Why are we involved in the Green Party? Because it's just clear what kind of interference is trying to happen.
What's the latest poll? Like, we got a will to pull it up. What's the latest poll in Nevada when you look at Harris versus Trump?
Yeah, because you may be thinking, okay, well, the Green Party's what? Got a poll of 1%? You know,
1 to 3% usually in the states there. What's the latest poll?
So the Real Clear Politics average has Harris up 0.2.
Okay.
The latest polls, though, one, she is up 4, and Trump is up 3 in the other.
Okay,
the
so all these margin of errors, and the Green Party gets somewhere between 1 and 3%.
Different game.
I feel like I'm listening to sports radio.
I can't tell you how long this podcast is. Oh, they go on for hours.
Oh, my God. We need a microphone control in this country. We need a series of, like, tests that need to be passed, and we need a series of checks and a waiting period.
You definitely need a background check before you can get a podcast microphone.
Yes.
I agree.
I don't think it even violates the Constitution. Pretty easy to get that. Sensible reforms enacted.
The thing I can't believe about that clip is that Sekulow just said it openly on his podcast. The Trump lawyer got on his podcast and said, we are helping Jill Stein so that Trump will win.
And Stein is taking his help. It's not like he's some rogue actor. They're working together.
And it's not even just Sekulow from Trump World who's helping her, right?
In Wisconsin, Stein's campaign has been represented by Michael D. Dean, one of the lawyers who helped Trump try to overturn the 2020 election. She paid $100,000 to a Republican consulting firm operated by a guy who, according to The Intercept, took part in the January 6th insurrection.
Cool.
It's also since come out that a pro-Trump billionaire named Bernie Marcus secretly provided support to Stein's 2016 campaign.
Wow, this for sure sounds like the campaign of a staunchly independent progressive who's standing up to both parties and their big money backers.
When the Wall Street Journal asked Stein about all this high-level Republican support, she called the reporting, quote, a propaganda campaign.
And I guess if you're just aiming for 1% of voters, maybe 2%, you can afford to alienate the other 98%.
Well, let's talk about her campaign, because this time around, she has found an issue that speaks to a good number of Democrats.
Oh, Gaza, right?
Yeah, here's Stein in May speaking to a Gaza relief dinner at a Muslim community center in Dearborn, Michigan, asking for volunteers to help her campaign get on state ballots.
Tell them to go to our website, which is jillstein2024.com. They can plug in to the ballot drive, and we can help them basically volunteer. This is not an impossible task. They've tried to make it an impossible task to silence opposition, especially because the American people are in a very active state of uprising right now against this permanent war economy and this genocide. So the American people are really primed for a campaign that would be of, by, and for the people instead of, by, and for the war contractors, for APAC, for the health insurance industry, and the usual suspects who control our political system.
Like a lot of Jill Stein quotes, I'm like, I can get aboard 25% of that.
Right. Well, that's how she gets you. Something I want to emphasize is that when Stein goes on TV, she presents her campaign as a symbolic protest against the administration's Israel policy. But when she's in rooms like this, especially in Michigan, which has large Arab and Muslim populations, she goes a big step further and suggests that she is actually going to stop Israel, that voting for her can bring an end to it.
She actually opened that speech by pumping her fist in the air and saying, they will not stop us from freeing Palestine.
Well, it's not clear to me how voting for Stein accomplishes this, given how open she has been about trying to peel away Democratic votes and other words to help Trump win.
Famous friend of Palestine, Donald Trump.
Right.
The journalist Mehdi Hassan put this to Stein and her running mate in a recent interview on his media network, Zateo. Here's a clip.
Every vote for our campaign is a shot across the bow of the empire.
So it's about feeling good. It's not about actually changing
things. It's about
consolidating
power. Well, no, it is.
What you just described is a feeling, right?
No, no. I said it is
a
shot.
Well, let me finish my question, then you can answer. Let me repeat the question. Lay out for me the steps whereby I go into a voting booth, vote green,
okay,
and the genocide stops.
Let me put
I don't
it
see
very
that happening.
Clearly.
Yeah.
So whether we get 2%, 5%, 15%, we are creating a very organized coalition that is here for the long haul.
That's right.
For a political vehicle to stop genocide.
That's
and
right.
The imperial policies that go with it. So every vote that one casts is huge. And every time one even registers in the polls on behalf of our campaign is another warning shot.
Agreed.
So where does that go?
Yep.
Where that goes is directly to the White House and to Congress to
correct.
Say that, you know, we not only have public opinions polls to show that this is the very firm commitment of the American people.
So it's
right
a pressure
now.
Campaign.
It
it's
is to say, a
it's
huge
to send a message.
Pressure. Well, it's
send
not,
a message to who,
it's,
though?
To the power holders who
Who will be the power holder?
So whoever they are.
It's like, okay, you are in your house. You're standing there. The door is open and there's a bear running at you.
Mm-hmm.
And you have enough time to fire a warning shot into your ceiling or close the door. And you're mad because the door hasn't been closing the way you want it to close. So to teach the door a lesson, you fire a shot into the air and the bear fucking eats you.
Oh, that's a great metaphor.
Thank you.
Did you just do that on the spot?
Yes.
That was really good. So Mehdi keeps pushing her. It goes on for a long time like this to explain why voting for the Green Party will help to end the killing in Gaza, and she just can't give an answer.
There's more evidence that Stein's campaign isn't really aimed at helping Gaza. She'd initially courted a Palestinian-American activist named Nora Erekat to be her running mate. Erekat later revealed that she'd said yes on the condition that Stein promised to drop out if Biden got a permanent ceasefire deal in Gaza and imposed an arms embargo on Israel.
I mean, that makes sense. You know, use the Green Party's 1% as leverage to force the Democrats to deliver big progressive concessions. Like, what an opportunity for the Green Party to prove that it's not just a spoiler that benefits Republicans. It really can bring progressive change.
Except Stein refused. And when Mehdi Hassan asked her about this, Stein said of Nora Erekat, quote, bless her heart, but she is new to this process.
Ugh. So this feels like the 2016 Jill Stein recount fund all over again. Exploit the very real fear and disaffection of a subset of Democratic voters by promising something you have no ability or maybe even intention of delivering, and then use that support to benefit yourself.
All of which may be why actual progressives are getting fed up with Stein. Here's Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez on Instagram last month.
If you have been your party's nominee for 12 years in a row, 4 years ago and 4 years before that and 4 years before that, and you cannot grow your movement pretty much at all and can't pursue any successful strategy, and all you do is show up once every 4 years to speak to people who are justifiably pissed off, but you're just showing up once every 4 years to do that, you're not serious. You're not to me, it does not read as authentic. It reads as predatory. I'm sorry. I'm just saying it.
She's right. The Green Party under Stein has shrunk from about 320,000 members 20 years ago to 230,000 members today.
Wow.
There are only 143 Green Party office holders in the entire country and none in statewide or federal offices.
Yeah, she's not really in it to affect change or build an alternative to the two-party system, it seems like.
But if she gets Trump elected again, just think of the recount fundraisers she could hold.
Yeah, the rise of the squad has been really instructive for understanding Stein and how she actually fits into our political system. Because here finally are young progressives challenging the party from within who sometimes have backgrounds in third parties like Ocasio-Cortez does. And Stein, rather than treating them as allies, is trying to undermine and weaken them too.
You can see why Stein might not be AOC's biggest fan, but it's very hard to understand why she's also going after Rashida Tlaib.
Wait, Rashida Tlaib, the first ever Palestinian American in Congress and left-wing Michigan Democrat who is arguably Biden's most vocal critic on Israel, the issue that Stein claims to care the most about? She's going after her?
Yeah, Stein's party is running a candidate against Tlaib named Brenda Sanders, who believes in chemtrails and who in 2020 said of Tlaib, "This is what is wrong with America. The interests of the Gaza Strip should not be prioritized over the interests of Detroiters."
I understand being disaffected with the two-party system. I understand being angry with Joe Biden over Gaza. I really do. But I cannot overstate to people that if you are considering voting Jill Stein to register that feeling, you are allowing yourself to be taken in by a grifter who is working arm-in-arm with Republicans to get Trump elected. Aaron, I don't suppose you've seen this O.J. Simpson documentary from 2016 that won the Oscar, have you?
No, I haven't.
It's really good. Julie and I have been watching it, and I kept thinking about Jill Stein. During O.J.'s trial, his lawyer's closing argument to the jury was that the LAPD deserved to be punished for its history of racism, which is absolutely true. They also argued that acquitting O.J. would deliver that punishment, which I think is not really true, but it worked. Members of the jury have since said that their vote to acquit OJ was payback to the LAPD. But of course, this did not do a thing to punish the LAPD. All it did was let a famous rich guy get away with murder. And it feels like Stein is doing something very similar. She's exploiting this same kind of desire to do something in a way that will not actually bring the justice that people want to bring. So I really think if you or someone you know is thinking that pulling that lever for Jill Stein will punish Joe Biden for Gaza, it won't. He is going to be fine. What it will do is punish 330 million Americans who are not responsible for what's happening in Gaza, but will see their rights and freedoms curtailed by another Trump term. And it would punish people in Gaza, who even the uncommitted movement says would be in substantially greater danger under Trump. So please, really, there's nothing of any progressive value to be gained by voting for Stein and so much harm that could be done.
Yeah, I completely agree with you, Max. And I just want to add another metaphor to the pile of metaphors. If you were caught in a trap, you don't want to like gnaw off an arm that isn't in the trap. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like you're gnawing off the arm that is not caught
right.
in the trap.
You're like punishing your arm to do something.
Yeah, exactly. It's like what Jill Stein is saying that voting for her can accomplish is simply not anything that bears out in any form of reality.
Yeah, won't accomplish that. And she's not trying to accomplish it.
And she's not even trying. Exactly. And another thing is, you know, Donald Trump being really supportive of her candidacy, mm-hmm. it tells you everything you need to know.
Yeah.
Like if he likes that she's in the race, he likes that she's taking votes away. If he thought that she was taking votes away from him, you know that he would have a nickname for her. And he doesn't. So there you go.
Well, let's go out with 2016 comments from the left-wing academic Noam Chomsky. Even though he'd been Stein's highest profile endorser in 2012, in 2016, he said swing state voters shouldn't vote for Stein. They should vote for Democrats. And here's Chomsky on Democracy Now! Explaining why.
In a swing state, I would vote against Trump. And by elementary arithmetic, that means you hold your nose and you vote Democrat. I don't think there's any other rational choice. Abstaining from voting or, say, voting for, say, a candidate you prefer, a minority candidate, it just amounts to a vote for Donald Trump.
How We Got Here is written and hosted by me, Max Fisher, and Aaron Ryan.
Our producer is Emma Illich Frank.
Evan Sutton mixes and masters the show.
Jordan Cantor sound engineers the show. Audio support from Kyle Seglin, Charlotte Landis, and Vasilis Fotopoulos.
Production support from Leo Duran, Raven Yamamoto, and Adrian Hill.